to hear the news. Break out the booze. Our summer's no longer boring. A slash is loose, a monster ghoul, and a doll that'll rip your skin off. But if you're having a doubt, just ask aloud. The cult will tell you what we promise. The boys wear their skeletons on their sleeves, and we will give you
hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I am Rolando.
John.
And welcome to our annual summer special, Hot Sexy Death Summer 3D. This week we are reviewing Tourist Trap. As always, John will always give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts and then we're going to a deep spoiler analysis. I'm committing you to always. So.
Oh, always. And in true Skeleton Boys fashion, not a single one of our movies was 3D.
Yeah.
But we're going to name it what we want, okay?
Yeah. Summer's over. This is our last movie.
Oh, no. It just feels like it just began.
Yeah, summer's only from the first day of summer for 4 weeks. That's it. It's no more summer.
Yeah, just 4 weeks. That's it.
Yeah, enjoy spring. Or right, what's next? Autumn. Whatever. Yeah. Just whatever the fuck is next.
Halloween.
But yeah, but first, before we end our summer, we're able to go to autumn. We're going back to TV Corner, watching Chucky Season 2, Episode 2. The sinners are on. Our sinners are much more fun. Sinners are much more fun.
Yep, we still got to review some more Chucky before you run out and get your pumpkin spice lattes.
Yeah. It's pumpkin spice everything.
Pumpkin spice everything. Yeah. As everybody knows, Johnny is a huge fan of the pumpkin spice flavoring. He wasn't very vocal for years and years about how pumpkin spice sucks.
Yeah. You just love pumpkins. You just eat them. You just put your hands in pumpkins and just scoop out of them and eat them in your mouth.
Like a fucking hippo over here just munching away.
Yeah. Great. So episode 2 of Chucky, season 2. I think from what I remember last week, wink, we were a little off by how much setup the first episode was. In my opinion, this was more of a proper Chucky episode where we've been used to.
Yes.
So
in fact, I kind of forgot what I feel like what happened in the first episode. Like you were like nailed it on the head. They were just tying up a bunch of loose ends to just move forward as quickly as possible.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we lost, yeah, they even lost a character they introduced and he died at the end of it or whatever, the adopted stepbrother, right?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
okay.
The annoying little kid.
Yeah. So
what, yeah, this one, what? They're at the, it's a Catholic school, boarding house.
Yes.
Orphanage.
I guess it's like an alternative to, instead of going to like a juvenile detention or something, because they're underage, I imagine, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And in fact, like there is this one kid who is being set up to be Lexi's main bully.
Yes, he's going to be the main bully for the entire season.
I'm pretty excited because I'm like, this guy seems like a mean dude.
And they've perfectly laid the groundwork for the entire season.
I'm like, we're just waiting for him to do something super evil. It'll happen, I'm sure.
Definitely, yeah. Devin Saul was back too.
Punch to the gut if it didn't happen,
yeah. Yeah, real punch to the gut if he were to die the next episode. I don't know. We'll see. Nice to have. Actually, I do want to. I know we're being a little facetious and having a private joke to ourselves, but what is it? I actually was quite excited for Lexi to be bullied, because in the beginning of the series she was bullied, and I actually thought, okay, cool, she's gonna meet her match, right? Like in terms of somebody.
Some. I feel like it's pretty difficult to bully somebody that's addicted to drugs. Yes.
So. Yeah. I guess they're gonna go all the way with the storyline, huh? Drug addiction. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Which they've only showed her once be like incapacitated with drugs.
Right. Yeah.
Which potentially saved all the kids' lives except for the annoying little stepbrother.
Yeah, she's clearly having a hard time of it adjusting to her life after season one. And I was really excited. I mentioned briefly right now, I'm super excited to see Devon Sawa back. So he's going to be like returning, I'm assuming, in every season now and playing a different character.
What? Devon Sawa? No, he died. Both his characters died.
Yeah, the actor. I meant the actor. That actor. No. He's playing...
playing the priest. The main father.
Father Bryce. And...
So he's always playing a father of some sort.
Oh, I love that. That's a really cool thing for the character. And it's nice to have him back. I think he's been a plus on the show. Much of this episode was kind of focused on them kind of acquainting themselves, total setup episode, right? About the dynamics of, I think it's called Incarnate Lord. So it's the name of the place. So, and then we kind of get, we immediately get to Chucky's here, right? And we kind of see him start revealing himself to people, which I thought was quite surprising. He reveals himself to the nun. Scares her to death.
She has a heart attack and dies.
She has a heart attack and
dies. Like, he's so... I think this is... I feel like it's setting something up, but I wouldn't know. I guess I'll have to do the next episode to explain it. He seems a little too endeared that she's being scared to death. Like, he's like, oh, man. Oh, that's so sweet. Like, which I thought was kind of out of character for Chucky. I don't know.
Oh.
But maybe it would be something...
Maybe, yes.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Because I believe Jake has some ideas of what he could be up to, this Chucky. And I kind of like this idea of multiple, like there's just, I don't know, not an infinite number of Chuckies, but there's a large amount of Chuckies that haven't been accounted for. We don't know the number, which is smart. And I'm always impressed with Brad Dourif's portrayal of each one.
Yeah.
They're... the same, but still there's subtle differences to the way he's doing the voice for each one. So it's kind of, you know, kudos for him.
It's also, so Jennifer Tilly, Tiffany, I guess, is still holding
Nika hostage.
Nika captive.
Yeah.
But she does wake up to a doll head that's been severed.
Oh, yeah.
Like another Tiffany doll.
Godfather 2 style. Or, sorry, Godfather, the horse scene.
Yeah, the horse head.
Horse head, yeah.
Which I think is a play on it's Chucky saying it's the whore's head.
The horse head.
I'm reaching.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just like how they're doing that. And Jennifer Tilly's a little, like, maybe on edge about Nika is... possibly talking to Chucky in her head, which we don't know if that's possible, but then I don't know. I don't know if it's possible.
Well, we get more, more explanation for how Tiffany is able to control Nika. She's able to, like, cut her hand to show her blood, and that will, like, turn Nika into...
Oh, Chucky.
Chucky, because the screen goes this bright red or whatever, and then like she's able to switch between characters or whatever, or souls.
And do you think she cut off her arms and legs because of that Misfit song? I'm going to say yes.
Well, I was going to say that probably a play on... Well, the way they went about their like daily lives reminded me of Mommy Dearest.
Misery?
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like a play on... Is it Mommy Dearest? No, it's Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. Sorry.
Whatever Happened to Baby
Jane. That's what it is. Where she's basically keeping her sister locked up in the room or whatever in a wheelchair. So kind of taking care of her and poisoning her or whatever.
Actually, I think it's a play on, there's an episode of Atlanta that we reviewed
previously. Teddy something Perkins or Teddy
Perkins? I don't
know. I don't remember.
But while this is happening, a cop who seems to be a fan of Jennifer Tilly, the actress,
right,
is trying to investigate where Nika is, because Nika, well, Chucky as Nika killed a bunch of people and he's trying to find her.
Right.
And he climbed her fence, which she wasn't supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's setting up that this cop's going to be a problem the rest of the season for sure.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like this cop, the bully kid Trevor, just going to set up the rest of the season.
I'll go
being the antagonist.
I want to say that all this stuff with Nika and Jennifer Tilly, I don't like. I feel so shoved into the script. Like, we have like the, and they spent too much time on it. I kind of feel like this B story that's going on right now is just, they focus way too much on it, and I don't quite see how it's adding up yet. It could end up like, you could, you know, finally weave these A B stories together, but they, the Nika stuff and Jennifer Tilly just seems so far removed from where we are with the, you know, A plot with the kids, that it doesn't really, to me, it feels like, again, like, specifically this episode, like, if it was the one thing I didn't like, because it was too much of them, I felt like less could be more with those characters, and wasn't...
Yeah, possibly. I think we're also, it was really trying to, they really want to introduce Glenda,
mm-hmm.
which you get, like, a little teaser of Glenda popping out at the end, but, yeah, you did notice that there was, like, two sets of feet, right? Which is not... Glenda was like the same character as the doll.
I thought there was two arms, but I remember at the end.
Oh, I thought I saw four sets of feet. So I thought it was like two sets. I mean, not four sets of feet. Two sets of feet. 4 feet. Like Pop In and Two were like supposed to be a little more feminine punk, and the other one's regular nerdy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And also they roll up in a... in a cool vehicle that says they, them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I thought was funny, actually.
No, yeah. I mean, there's parts of it I like, but I kind of want to only focus on the kids. I'm more interested in what's happening with them. Like, yeah. Just in general, even when they introduced some of the, I'm assuming, supporting characters in the church as well. There's, looking at the credits, it's like Sister Ruth, who I think is kind of like the more stern, strict one of the other one. And I kind of feel like there's a Sister Catherine who's like probably more nice and more cares more about the kids and stuff. And then they introduced another character as well. What's her name? Nadine. So.
Oh, Nadine. Yeah. Yeah. The neurotic klepto.
Yeah. So.
She's pretty fun so far.
Yeah, I enjoyed the whole setup of this episode and the world and what this could mean for, like, the incarnate Lord and stuff like that. I was more interested in that than I was, to be honest, in what was going on with Jennifer Tilly and Nika. It just seemed like a rehash of stuff we already kind of knew.
Yeah, that, and also it's like, yeah, because everything with the Chucky doll that's running around the alternate alt orphanage or whatever is... like, he's not killing people. Like, that first death was an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Just, he's taking pictures of the kids, and they don't know why, and they catch his phone, and he's taking selfies.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, what, they are able to catch that Chucky doll, I think, right?
Yes. Yeah, they have it hostage at the end of the episode, and Jake says, before they cut to black or whatever, like, I know what he wants, or something. Like, I know what he's here for. Oh my God,
and then there's a lot of Devin Sawa's character telling Jake and Devin, like, well, you know, don't fraternize with the women. They're like, don't worry about that.
Oh, yeah. We didn't mention that they're living together now.
Yeah.
Devin and Jake are sharing a room together.
But Jake's like, no, we got to keep this stuff a secret. And it's like, you're in a Catholic building. Don't worry about it.
There are undertones.
It's all secrets, yeah. Baby.
Yeah, it kind of feels like there's definitely like other things going on there, you know? Either there's definitely probably closeted gay nuns or priests or fathers there, I'm assuming. Or there's like something still up in the air about the psychiatrist who recommended sending them there. Like, she's kind of still a wild card out there about why she would send him there. I feel like she collected dolls, so I'm assuming somehow she's connected to to Chucky somehow, which I thought was weird, which I'll probably revisit later in the season. But I thought it was,
and not to mention the detective trying to find Nika,
mm-hmm.
Is going to be an issue for sure,
because he died at the end of this episode. I know you're being facetious, but like,
oh, he did die at the end of this episode. You're right, because the kids show up.
Yeah, because he's cleaning blood or something. Yeah, right?
No, I wonder what the Trevor kid's going to do to, like, throw a wrench into the plan.
He's going to be an antagonist all season. I know that for sure.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed this sort of... To me, this would have been an appropriate first episode, and it would have kind of perfectly set up everything. Only criticism would be just too much of the Nika Jennifer Tilly stuff for me. I've never really been a fan of it, to be honest. I always thought it was too much, you know, but.
Well, hopefully next episode, it won't be that much.
Or at all. Yeah. Alrighty. Do you have any other thoughts?
Nah, just great. Anyway, the series is great.
All right, let's hit the beach. It's summertime. We're packing up the...
Oh, no, we're not going to make it to the beach because we took an old road. Our car broke down. Yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah. Good thing there's this abandoned tourist attraction.
House of Wax. Or no, Slater's Last Oasis or whatever the fuck it was. Yeah. Alrighty. Let's move over to our main review of Tourist Trap. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please. For Stephen King's favorite horror film of all time, coming in at number 3, The Path Less Taken sucks.
Is that literally is that figuratively?
I don't know. Coming in at number 2 for Tourist Trap by David Schmalier of Puppet Master fame. His first name's David, right?
Yes.
Fuck that up.
Yeah, you got it.
Coming in at number 2, Plasterface likes playing with dolls.
Yep.
Apparently that's what the team would call the mask, or like the main doll mask. And coming in at number 1 for Tourist Trap, Sideshow Bob's retirement home plan.
I also would have accepted Cletus, but
Cletus, yeah.
Clark Connor, what's his name? Clark. It's Chuck Connors is leaning into his Cletus hard. Alrighty, John, Tourist Trap. One of my favorite posters. That I've never seen this movie before, so what
I thought, I think that for a while there I confused that with the like Phantom of Paradise or even any other movie that kind of has a similar looking good stuff though. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's fun. That opening, even though it seems kind of corny, the more I thought about it, I'm like, man, that'd be fucked up. It reminded me of which I know this movie came out before, but it reminded me of Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn, that scene where Ash is trying to sit in the chair and the chair breaks.
Mm.
And then all the inanimate objects start laughing at him.
Yeah, there was a bit of... specifically the scene you're talking about, there was like a lot of like psychological horror, right? It leans into that a little bit.
Because it presents itself as almost lighthearted, but there's something that's just very demented.
Mm-hmm.
Like this guy, it really cold open starts off with one of the people in this car is trying to get gasoline and finds this abandoned building, walks in, and these inanimate objects are popping out of nowhere, like life. Well, mannequin style dolls. I thought it was funny that they keep there's a couple of throwaway lines where they say like, oh, the guy that made these, he was like a master at these. I'm like, was he? These look pretty bad. Looks like this is all you could afford and he put it in the movie, but okay.
It's like somebody went to a warehouse of props and just pulled whatever the fuck they could.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, like all these inanimate objects are popping out of nowhere and this guy can't get out of this abandoned building anymore because the doors won't open.
Right, yeah.
And yeah, and then he gets killed by a pipe that flies from the wall.
Yeah.
Or something like that, right? A piece of rebar or something.
Mm. Yeah.
That's what Stephen King called the scariest thing he'd ever seen.
Yeah, he said it was one of his favorite openings of a movie. And I would agree with him. I think I was actually impressed. When I saw the beginning of this movie, I was like, oh man, this is going to be a rough one. But the first kind of death happens in the beginning. And I thought it was well shot, well conceived. There was one jump scare where the whatever thing or whatever pops out of the closet after he gets near the door. I thought that actually worked on me. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
That actually fucking worked on me. And the way the whole scene was designed, it's so like weird and psychologically, you know, like there's some kind of haunting or like ghost shit going on. I was like, what the fuck is this movie? It made me think like, what the fuck is this movie about? When I see Tourist Trap, I'm thinking, okay. And there's like a plastered face, you know, it's holding a camera and it's like has its mouth open or something, petrified almost. And I'm thinking, this is a fucking slasher movie. This is just going to be a dumb slasher movie. And you have this really well done beginning movie. And I was like, wow, I actually sat up and I was like, this movie has my attention now. So,
yeah.
And I will say, The first hour of this movie is good. Last 30 minutes, it does lose a bit of steam for me.
Well, because it gets kind of goofy, like especially with the score and.
I think they should have leaned harder into the goofiness. I think there's story choices that are made that I think hold the movie back, and I mean I can get into specifics, you know, spoilers and stuff, but I think there was a point in like about the last like 45 minutes or so of this movie, to me just really kind of let the first part of the movie, which I liked, you know, I was enjoying, so that was kind of like my biggest hang up, because I was like this completely surprised by the intro of this movie, and then where I was kind of interested in about where it was going, and like there's like all this other stuff, and I think it ends up landing, the movie ends, and I think it lands in an interesting place, something I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, that, well, I mean, I guess I did like the final kind of couple of frames,
so like bizarre, weird. You know, like if you were to just see that scene out of context, it would not make, it would be ridiculous. It'd be, it's like crazy. Like, what the fuck you think, like, what is this movie about? I mean, there's like, you know, we're on Instagram and stuff, and the reels, sometimes they show clips of movies out of context, and it's just like, what is this fucking movie? You know, I have no idea what the fuck's going on. And I think this might have the same appeal, but,
I just want to, so, Pino Donaggio is the guy that wrote the score for this.
Mm-hmm.
They spent one fifth of the budget just paying him to do the score. But it's he's the guy that did the score for Carrie, the original Carrie. He did the score for Piranha. Then he did Tourist Trap. Then he did not a whole lot. Well, The Howling, The Black Cat.
Yeah.
And that's it.
It is. How would you describe the type of music it was playing? Because like, it's this, the movie opens like on the credits, right? So you see like every possible person involved in this movie, and they play this odd jokey, like it would be, I don't even know if there's a like modern equivalent. So what I would think of is like if you watched the Andy Griffith Show, kind of like jolly whistle, you know, kind of just the complete disposition of what you think a movie called Tourist Trap music should be playing.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it did feel like we were watching Funhouse or what's the other one, like House of Wax or something.
With yeah.
It's very... I don't know. I'm not sure what to say. Yeah, the score was kind of funny, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah, there's some other music like towards the middle and end of this movie that I think worked really well. But like this particular piece was just so like odd and just like... And they used all of it clearly because like they spent like a good like 3-4 minutes just like showing, doing this whole entrance of it. And I'm sure the idea is that like, well, we got to get our money's worth, is where most of the budget went to this composer. So like, gotta show his music.
I do like our cast of characters. It's, you know, the beginning of stereotypical, like this character's like this, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I like that the guy that dies in the cold open, it's funny that they're like, casting call is probably a ripped dude who can keep shirt open to die at the beginning. So the ripped dude dies. I don't even remember his name. I know he pops out in the car at the very end too, right? I think there's like a weird reveal.
That would be a
stuff.
Spoiler. I don't know.
Oh, would it though?
Would it?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I think
it's like,
do these people really? Who? Do people really die in this movie? Is what I'm asking.
Yes, I want to say yes. People do.
Oh fuck! I don't know. This is a psychological thriller.
It's true. Nothing makes sense. Nothing makes sense. Everybody. Nobody knows that nothing makes sense. A note I wanted to make about the beginning, like. It's so crazy because like you have this guy, he's trying to get gas or something, right? And then a tire fixed, correct? And then like he goes into this like abandoned diner, and then he gets tourist trapped into one of the rooms, and then you know he dies or whatever. But
it's also broad daylight.
Yeah, and I found that like normally. One of the pluses, I would say, is normally this part would have been probably portrayed by a woman, right? And, like, that woman would die. And then you had this very, like you described, very male, you know, macho, blonde-haired guy, you know, struggling and dying, kind of like, I know this is going to be an odd comparison, you know, like, you know, big of a death Drew Barrymore's death was.
Yeah.
Kind of like out of the blue, surprised murder. But clearly, I'm not trying to do like a one-to-one comparison of the dude, like, because nobody knew who this guy was. But it was a little out of character that, like, I thought this guy was going to be our main protagonist, our main guy. But he ends up focusing on all of the people, other characters looking for him and stuff. So.
Yep. Mel Bimbo.
Mel Bimbo, too.
It's like they're looking for him, and then it's all like nobody is ever really concerned about.
They just get it. Yeah. So they get to oh look, there's some water. Let's go. Let's jump naked into the water. Classic.
Yeah, Barry. Like I don't know about you guys, but I'm gonna go swimming. Apparently, Schlager was too shy to ask any of these people if they were willing to be naked for that scene. Mm-hmm. So when he asked him on the day, kind of sheepishly, they all said like, "Well, of course not."
Yeah.
But it's really funny, like whoever wrote the fucking trivia for that. Let me just read you the whole thing.
Okay.
Because I think it's worth a listen. Let's see. Oh, also this is before PG-13 and it was rated PG and David thought that that's what hurt the movie.
And it wasn't rated R?
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Or like if I had a rated R, I couldn't play at certain places. You know, that's why they try so hard to get PG-13 now or PG because they couldn't. Yeah. There's certain like theaters they can only have an X amount of number of rated R movies in like malls. That's not a thing anymore because malls are dead. But back then,
that's true. but not the Mall of America, as I should know, because I was stuck in Minneapolis.
That's right.
An amount of time this past weekend.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead and read the trivia.
Okay, so the script originally called for nudity, but director David Schmalier said he was too bashful and embarrassed to bring it up with Tanya Roberts and the other actresses during casting. When they got to the lake scene, Schmalier finally asked them if they'd be willing. The collective answer was no, even though Robin Sherwood had been nude in her first film, The Love Butcher, 1975. She would later go nude in her last role in Death Wish 2 in 1982. Tanya Roberts would finally go topless that same year in The Beastmaster, 1982, and full nude in Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, 1984. Like, who the fuck wrote this piece of trivia? It's like, don't worry, you can see all these chicks' titties in this movie, in this movie, in this movie. Like, what a fucking creep. Like,
I think it was probably David. He's probably all bitter. He's like, well, she took her top off right after I asked her. And this she took her chop off right before.
Just go to my website, whackinmovies.com.
That's the one from, what is it? Knocked Up.
Oh, yeah. Just thought I would share.
So the lesson is, don't be afraid, just ask early for nudity.
Hey, how about some nudity? No. Oh, well, all right,
try it. Don't be scared. Just put yourself out there. I want you to be nude. And then now actually. Yeah.
Oh man, I was gonna make a joke about what's his name, but I forgot his fucking name already. Sorry for the cursing. Miramax, what's his name?
Oh yeah, Harvey Weinstein.
Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
Anyway. So yeah, what can we say about this movie? There is.
What'd you think of some of the kills?
An actual human killer, I think, is important to note. That's wearing a doll mannequin-like outfit, but seems to have telekinesis.
That is, yes, has telekinesis, right? Yes, and it's set up.
Even at the beginning, the second kill you get is, they get to the sort of farmhouse style tourist attraction, and there's like a nice older man that's willing to help him,
Mr. Slauson, right?
Mr. Slauson, who talked about how his brother was great at making these mannequin animatronic things or whatever, mannequins, dolls, not animatronic, and how he made one of these like Colonel Custer things shoot a gun in front of the kids. Mm-hmm. No, they're not kids, but these
tourists. People. Yeah,
tourists. And later you see in the back house when he said like, hey, don't leave this house for any reason. And one of the girls is like, I'm going to leave the house for a reason.
Actually, I'm going to leave the house. Yeah. So, yeah.
And she thinks she's hearing the guy, Woody. I remember his name was Woody.
Woody, yes. Yeah.
And gets stuck in a room with a bunch of like mannequin dolls that all kind of look at her. And then like clearly a person in like a mask pops out of nowhere.
Yes.
And does like head nods towards things. So like the door closes shut, the window shuts, and then she dies by getting strangled. Oh, she takes off a scarf from one of the mannequins and ties it around her neck, and it chokes her to death.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was pretty fun.
That was pretty fun. I thought,
because this is era before you could see things like monofilament on screen.
They actually strangled her. I'm just kidding.
Yes.
Oh, it's like, you want to be naked now? She's like, no, strangle me.
No, just kill me off.
I have to be in this other movie, or I have to be naked in. Favorite movie I could be naked in. But yeah, I thought for the most part, yeah, like, I was surprised that we're focused on these sets of characters, and they kind of dumbly were like, okay, they told them not to go to the house. Of course, they all decide we got to go to the house. There's even the one that, I guess she was the good one of the three who wanted to stay, right? And she's kind of...
Oh, that's what I was going to say, like the very, they try to stereotype the group of characters. Like she was the more like for lack of better terminology, like the Jesus loving one.
You know, yes.
Like she was the good girl.
Good girl, wholesome, whatever adjective you want to put there.
And then the other girl was clearly a whore because she wasn't actually married to that guy.
Brunette.
She lied about it.
She wore a the good girl wore a silly sundress hat. Looked like.
Yeah. And a very like prairie home style dress.
Yes, yeah.
And everybody else is in like cut off jean shorts and
yeah,
and tank tops.
And mind you, this worked. I think it worked for what's going on. Like, this is fine. It all worked in the movie. And they did have another male character, but he was kind of like nothing. There's nothing to his character, right? He was just kind of there.
No, like he immediately goes and Mr. Slauson was like, "Oh, come with me. I'll help you with the Jeep." And then he's gone until he. Well, eventually appears later.
Tied up or something, yeah. Kind of a nothing character. Yeah, like he kind of gets, you know, whatever, captured off screen.
Yeah. And when we get the reveal of where he's been, because, right, the third girl gets caught. And that's where you finally see that he's been tied up because she comes to or whatever, right? And she's tied up as well.
Right. He sort of brings...
And for the life of me, I was like, oh, fuck, I missed something. Because there was like a fourth girl that was tied up on the bench. And I thought it was a girl that had gotten killed at the beginning. And nope, it's just some other random girl.
They did a poor job of explaining that, yeah, he had another captor there with him. Another woman. Yeah. Didn't really explain how she got there. Just that nothing.
She's there.
She's just kind of there.
She's just there to exposition that, like, yeah, he's going to kill us. Okay. Like, who is? Oh, the guy's brother. He never left. I'm like, oh, okay.
Right. And he kind of wears, how do I describe it? It's kind of like he wears different masks, right? One that is very similar to Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, kind of like feminine looking hair, mask, women's clothing, right? That's what I gathered from it. It could have been women's clothing, but it was very feminine in its appearance, I thought. Maybe it's because they had an ascot or something. I don't know.
Maybe. He was just being Fred from Scooby-Doo.
Yes. What we find is that his brother... Mr. Slauson's brother lives in that house, right?
Yes. But he keeps calling it, what is it? It's because General Custard and somebody else couldn't get along, so he lives in the back house.
Right, yeah.
Which is foreshadowing. I'm just kidding. I'm sure it was supposed to mean something like that. I was just like, okay. I don't know. I don't understand what's going on, really.
Yeah, and I think the point... where the movie, to me, falls apart, which will lead us into spoilers, which I'll kind of, like, preface it, was when they reveal the killer, who the killer is pretty early on, yeah. Without spoiling it, but, like, even though it wasn't particularly hard to figure out what was going on, but...
No.
But yeah. Still, like, I think that by revealing the quote-unquote killer, they kind of, like, cut their face off before it could like continue, you know? Like it got kind of like boring after that, in my opinion.
Yeah, it should have been a reveal for the end. That's why actually when that moment happened, I was like, oh shit, the movie's almost over. And I looked, I was like, 25 minutes?
Yeah.
What else is gonna happen?
That's how I felt too. It kind of felt like specifically like the wholesome girl who's been kind of like has taken over that kind of main character position now that Woody's dead. Yeah,
the final girl.
Yeah, the final girl. So when she finds out, I'm like, oh shit! Like, and like you said, like there's probably going to be like the movie's almost over. We know who the killer is, and then it just kept going. It kept going, and the same reveal again to a different character.
Who escaped.
I'm like, what's the point of this? Like, they like we already like know who the killer is, and Like, I almost feel like it should have been reverse ordered, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, she dies and then it reveals to the audience, and then we already knew who he is before he kills or tries to kill the final girl. I don't know. That's what I thought. It was, to me, it was deflating story wise. It's kind of like they're doing the same thing, same reveal to a different character. They just did, but it, to me, it was out of order. But do you have any other thoughts before we go to spoilers?
No, I agree with all that.
Okay.
It's like,
okay, so we're going to go to spoilers.
Wait! No, 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 stop, stop, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
spoilers.
So get this, John. Davey is the killer, who is...
what?
A split personality of Mr. Slauson. Whoa! Whoa, Chuck
could not have figured that out.
Yeah, so the nice Mr. Slauson who ran the tourist thing or whatever before, yeah. Is, did he become telekinetic? Did he explain that, or was he already telekinetic?
I think he was already telekinetic, because they would always talk about, oh, you're mannequins are so lifelike because they move on their own and blah blah blah, because he always had this ability,
right? Yeah.
And then there's like a whole bunch of backstory, but I don't really want to get into it. His brother and his wife were having an affair, and he caught them and he killed them both.
Mm-hmm.
And he made his wife into a mannequin, which allegedly David Schmalier's actual wife, I think, did a couple of voiceover lines that the mannequin would talk, and that was supposed to be a big reveal. Mm-hmm. But he cut it out of the edit, and his wife like never forgave him.
Yeah, I think it's his ex-wife. Oh. It's kidding. I don't know. I'm speculating. But yeah, and to me, that's where the film falls apart, because it was like, oh, okay, they finally revealed Mr. Slauson as the killer to the good girl, right? And then for some reason, he's not killing any of these people. He's like capturing them for reasons. Was he trying to like plaster them? Because he plasters the girl he had just captured into, I'm assuming, one of the dolls, right?
That's why I'm guessing he's doing that so that they would stay captive spiritually in there, I guess.
Yeah.
And then if he kills them, he can't really do that.
So if like the vibe of this movie,
even though that proves to be wrong, because at the end, that other guy that he kills, who is the second reveal, because the guy doesn't know that Slauson is Davey.
Right.
Comes out again at the end of the movie, but like, yeah. In a sort of, how does he die? How does a good girl kill Slauson?
With an axe. Chops his, right.
An axe to like the neck.
Yeah, shoulder, right? Blade, neck area.
So he dies, and then that's when she sees that the guy that was helping him, the other guy, his arm pops off. Oh, it's like right before that. Mr. Slauson's laughing, and or Davey's laughing, and starts taking apart the other guy that she thinks is gonna help her.
That's right, yeah. What was I gonna say? If I could just kind of like, this movie's clearly influenced by The House of Wax and Texas Chainsaw Massacre, right? Kind of has those vibes to it. Almost like story beats too, or like almost the same as well. So yeah, so once he kind of reveals, this movie kind of just reveals who these killers are, it's kind of like, okay, well, what else is here? I mean, I don't care about any of these people. And then it just kind of, they kill the one of the girls, right? And
I think they're all dead except for our good girl.
That's right. He eventually goes on to kill all of them except for our good girl or whatever. And the end stuff was basically just him. What is he trying to do here? He's trying to like make her one of these, be his wife or something, or I don't know, man. It lost me, dude. Like my attention kind of like waned after this last half hour.
It's kind of weird, yeah.
Because
I just want to correct myself. So the David Schmalier's then wife actually had the lines of the mannequin that serves the drinks.
Mm.
Supposed to have two lines, and they edited them out. She never forgave him and divorced his ass for being a deadbeat, is what it says.
Nice.
I'm just kidding.
Nice. Makes sense. So.
But yeah, the final couple of frames of the movie are kind of fun because you see that I'm guessing she got the Jeep to start working, or that, what are they called, like the island cruisers, like the beach style,
right? Yeah,
vehicles. Mm-hmm.
That you can put like the windshield down or something.
Yeah. And like if you've seen 50 First Dates, that's they drive one of those famously throughout the entire movie,
which I'm sure everybody has. So
yes, absolutely. So, Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore, come on,
classic.
Yeah, she's driving. She's also got a funky looking face, and you see that she took her friends that are all mannequins now, put them in the vehicle, and she's also become one. I don't know, or she's just gone insane, or I don't know.
I think that right before she kills him, she kind of has like this psychotic break where she can't distinguish like the dolls, all these dolls that he made, wax figures that he made from real people, and it's kind of like they do a really cool job of like just like editing it together and then making her like seem like she's like losing her mind and stuff. So she's having like this very, very nicely done visual psychotic break. She's going crazy.
Yeah.
And but still has present of mind to like grab an axe and kill, you know, Mr. Slosson or whatever, Davy/Davy. And yeah, and then like you had like a crazy scene where, yeah, she gets four mannequins that look like your friends that are wearing the same clothes, which we are assuming that Mr. Slosson made into these figures with the bodies, right? He made like plastered figures of them. And then she's driving off, but she has like this crazy grin on her face. Like, but it's supposed to be like, oh, she got away, but you kind of get the impression that like, that's maybe not true, right? Like there could be more to it. Like she's imagining she got away with her friends, right? Or she's like so psychotically broke that she's, you know, thinks that her friends are okay and she saved the day while driving away with those figures that Mr. Slosson made.
Yeah, it kind of feels like, this movie came out before, but Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, the way that ended. Did you ever see that?
No. Is that the one Matthew McConaughey?
No.
No, I never seen the second one, actually. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Dennis Hopper.
Well, yes, I think I have seen it. But
it's Dennis Hopper is, I know this isn't related to Tourist Trap, but it's gonna, I promise it'll connect. Dennis Hopper is like a Texas Ranger, and he's trying to avenge his son, who is the guy in the wheelchair at the first movie who gets killed. And he goes like weird and rogue and buys like a absurdly long chainsaw and then two little mini chainsaws, like he puts like holsters.
Right.
And at the end, the final girl is the only girl to survive out of everybody. And she's stuck and she finds the chainsaw and she finds like the original Leatherface or something, like suggesting there's been several.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And she becomes the new one because she goes insane and she starts grabbing the chainsaw and starts like wildly, you know, wielding it. And this kind of felt the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. That she's... Maybe, right? Like maybe she's gonna like so permanently damaged, she's taking up this sort of life as well.
Yes.
You know, like it's ambiguous enough to be interesting, in my opinion. I'll kind of leave it there.
For sure.
But yes. All right. That was Tourist Trap. Do you have any other thoughts? Any other opinions?
No, it was a trap for tourists and network.
Okay. All right, let's...
I was going to say, it did remind me, did you ever see The Thing of the Desert? I think it's in Arizona.
I think you told me. You've told me before.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like... I was like, that's a tourist trap. And I will say, going through it, it definitely felt like I was going to get kidnapped and murdered. So,
your own tourist trap.
There's a lot of truth to this.
Yeah, I would be scared. Anytime I would travel like that, like I've made the drive several times from like Texas to California when I lived in Texas.
Yeah.
And my impression was like, okay, cool, let me put gas and get back on the road immediately. I don't want to stop or look at anything ever. That's how I felt. And then New Mexico is a disgusting place. Don't ever drive through New Mexico during the day. It's absolutely nothing. A disgusting city, state. So, anyways, do you want to rate this movie?
Yeah.
All right. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it?
Sexy bones.
Ooh, sexy bones. Girl, I know what you need.
Show us your
sexy spooky bones.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm gonna give Tourist Trap 7 sexy spooky bones.
Yeah.
To end our hot, sexy death summer.
Yeah, exactly. I think that we ended this summer at a hot, high point out of this year's picks. This I was also going to give it a 7 as well for Tourist Trap.
Yeah, it was good. Good stuff.
All right, summer's over, John. It's
time to bust out our sweaters.
What is it? Turtlenecks? Peacoats?
Cable knit sweaters?
Yeah. Get ready for the spooky season.
It's a freezing sun outside of my window right
now. Yeah.
It's definitely still not June.
It's...
Oh, shit. My birthday's basically tomorrow. Right? Something like that.
Alrighty. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals. Thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky in your hot, sexy death summer.